I'd like to call the meeting of June 17th to order, please. Roll call, Mr. Boom. Mr. Miller?
Absent.
Mr. Fleury? Mr. Beck?
Here.
I'm present. Mr. Denable?
Here.
And Mr. Harris? If you could all rise now for the Pledge of Allegiance, Mr. Reck, would you lead us?
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I haven't received any public comment cards, but I got a feeling you'd like to talk. I wonder why that is.
We will be having hearing, so if you're speaking to a specific...
No. Yeah, we probably shouldn't put that in. Okay, go ahead, you're up.
Well, good evening. Tonight, we are presenting the draft of the Marysville Joint Unified School District's LCAP plan. And for those of you who have been with me along this journey, we have had public input meetings, we've had bargaining units submit their requests and how they would like to see funding spread throughout the district, and we also did an online survey. As part of the LCAP document, they talk about what are the various stakeholders that you've engaged in this process, and it is listed in the front section of the draft of the LCAP, so I'm not going to go through each and every one of those, but we've had multiple opportunities for input. I still have the chart paper, which I hope to get rid of tonight, from the original meetings that we had at McKinney and at Yuba Gardens when we had a really great turnout of administrators, students, parents, community members, board members, and so I think that really laid the foundation for this entire plan. From the beginning, I'd like to thank Lenny Tate for her assistance in helping to put this together. We've also worked with Bobby Abold from the Yuba County Office of Education, who ultimately will review this document. And so far, she's been very, very helpful and is very supportive of the plan in its current form. It's gone through a couple of changes in format, but the content has remained the same. So let's get started.
Okay.
Last summer, the California legislature dramatically altered how public education is funded for the first time in over 35 years with the passage of the Local Control Funding Formula, and we now all refer to that as the LCFF. That's the short version. It's designed to provide school districts with a more equitable and flexible funding source by eliminating multiple categorical funds and placing the dollars into three grants. There's the base grant, supplemental grant, and concentration grant. Every district in the state receives a similar per pupil basis in the base grant allocation. Almost every district in the state receives a per pupil supplemental grant allocation that must be targeted in support of low income, English learner, and foster youth students. That is the overarching goal, to really provide additional services for those very three special groups of students who have some higher needs. In Marysville, as you all know, we educate slightly over 9,400 students in transitional kindergarten through 12th grade. Currently, we have 83% of our students that qualify as low income, 23% are English learners, and over 69 students qualify as foster youth, and they all attend Marysville Joint Unified School District schools every year. Since the total number of unduplicated, so they only count in one group, you can't count in multiple groups, low-income English learners and foster youth students exceeds the 20% threshold. Because of that, we receive the supplemental adjustment funds. That's an additional allocation of funds. We also exceed the 50% threshold, and therefore we receive another pot of money known as the concentration adjustment funds. With the LCAP, give you a little background. I think some of you have heard this many times, but let me go back over it just briefly for those who haven't. This is all based on the State Board of Education's 8 priorities in the state of California, and they fall under 3 basic areas: conditions of learning, pupil outcomes, and engagement. Within those, you'll see number 1, 2, and 3, basic conditions, implementation of state standards, and course access all fall under conditions of learning, and you can read the other 2 subgroups. When we talk about conditions of learning, what does that mean? Well, in the basic conditions, which is number 1, it means we have basic services ensuring all students have access to teachers who are fully credentialed in their subject areas, instructional materials are aligned with state standards, and safe, properly maintained school facilities are available for all of our students. Implementation of state standards. As you all know, we've moved away from the California state standards, and we now are implementing the California State Common Core state standards, and that's in English Language Arts, Math, Next Generation Science Standards, and English Language Development Standards. And so we want to make sure that all of our students have access to those programs and services. Course access, ensuring all students have a broad course of study in the required subject areas, including math, social science, science, visual and performing arts, health, physical education, career and technical education, and others that prepare them for college and careers, regardless of what school they attend or where they live. Student achievement falls under the pupil outcomes umbrella. And this is where we really focus on improving the outcomes for all of our students to ensure their success. And this success is measured in multiple ways, such as test scores, English proficiency, and college and career preparedness. Other student outcomes. This is looking at providing ways for the measurement of student performance in some specific required areas of study. And these include physical education, the arts, career technical training, and foreign languages. Under the umbrella of engagement, we look at how are students engaged in the education process. We look at the programs, the coursework, and opportunities that they are given, both in and out of the classroom, that motivate them and keep them in school. And of course, we would be remiss if we didn't focus on parent involvement and looking for ways to encourage parents to be partners in their child's education and how to engage them in the decision-making process. We also want to make sure that they feel that their students are being prepared for the world of work and for the higher education as well. Engagement, and this is where we look at school climate. Specific factors are both inside and outside the classroom that impact student success. This includes student health, safety, and discipline, as well as how connected all of the students feel to their schools. Those are the 8 state priorities. Taking into consideration all of the information that was gathered at our parent input meetings, along with our district advisory committee meetings, meeting with our bargaining units, talking with students, we have developed 3 goals that are rather large umbrellas that take into consideration a number of the state priority areas. So our first goal is to provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of the targeted populations. And then I've just listed below there all of the state priorities that fall under that first goal, and you'll notice 1 through 8 are all listed there. Our second goal is to enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our schools provide a physically and emotionally safe environment that is culturally responsive to all students. And again, the state priorities that are covered under that goal are listed there. And then our final goal is to increase parent, family, and community involvement in the education of all students. This is what the front page of the LCAP document looks like. This is a template that's provided to us by the state of California. And so it goes through all of those areas that I just talked about in the PowerPoint. And this is, as I said, the actual document. So this is page 1. You'll notice it says draft. because that is exactly what it is. This is my best combining of all of the goals and all of the areas that everyone said they wanted covered. It was a rather long list, and so looking at how do we group them into those three goals was my task, and so this is what we have for you to see. If you want to, if you're like me, that's a little small. Behind your board agenda is the longer version of this particular group of slides. This is number 6 of 23, and I'm going to walk you through just a couple of these so you kind of see how they fall out under this template. So under the description of the goal, which is, I get to use my laser pointer, right here, this one right here, you'll notice goal number 1, and I've read that goal to you, which is about providing learning opportunities that increase student achievement. And so it says, under the identified metric and the need, as indicated by our community input meetings and survey results, there is an overwhelming desire to, and then below there, all under goal 1, I've listed a number of things, the needs specifically. So the first one says the need. All teachers will be Title II highly qualified, and that's a term used in the Title II regulations. We will continue to provide professional development opportunities for all teachers to maintain the highly qualified status. Now, it's nice to identify a need, but then you also have to be able to show how are you going to measure that. And so under our metrics, we have the CMIS, which is the Compliance, Monitoring, Intervention, and Sanctions, which is part of the Title II regulations. We talk about the VPSS, which is the verification process for middle and high school level teachers in special subjects. We're going to look at professional development records, and then we're also going to look at master schedules. Our hope is that with additional professional development, we may see some new courses coming online, and that would be indicated in that master schedule. And then I think the next important thing to look at is the 3 years, because, you know, we can't start everything all at once as much as we'd like to. So in year 1, we are looking at 99% of our teachers will be highly qualified. We believe that's a realistic goal because we're very, very close to that. In a number of the other goals, you'll notice that we are looking at setting a baseline. So what we will do is we'll look at this first year, which is the 14-15 school year, and then we will set a goal for the second year and the third year. Some of the measurements are difficult for us right now because in the standardized testing, the new Smarter Balanced, we don't have any results this year, and we won't have results next year. So we're going to look at a variety of ways of setting the baseline and then moving forward. This is a document that we will go back and revisit every single year to see what the progress has been in attaining this first year's goal. We'll reassess and determine, have we met that goal? Is our next year's goal still realistic? And then also look at the funding that's going to become available. Right now, we really have a fairly good handle on the funding for next year, year 2 and year 3. You'll hear a little more of that when Mr. DiGiulio talks about the funding of this plan. So that will be coming up in the second part of this. So next, we talked about educators needing ongoing training in instructional strategies and practices. We'll set that baseline. I'm now on page 7, year 1. Year 2, we're going to then look at a percentage of teachers who personally and administratively are deemed effective, and how much they've improved. So it'll be a moving target, but we're not sure what that initial target's going to look like just yet until we get all of the metrics in place. All students must have access to state and board-approved materials, and that's looking at making sure all of our students have the best possible textbooks available to them, and that every student has a textbook. And as you will remember, with our one-time Common Core state standards funding, we set aside about $1 million for the math textbook adoption. In a couple of years, we're going to need to be able to have funds set aside for the language arts adoption. So you will notice that we are looking at having 100% of our students have access to those books in year 1, 2, and 3. But if you look under the related state and local priorities, number 1, basic conditions, We state here specifically that the mathematics materials will be purchased in 14-15, so they'll be available. They'll be coming in July and be ready for the first day of school. We also want to make sure that we have other Common Core materials and next generation instructional materials, that's the science, will be purchased as needed. And then you'll see it says ELA, that's English Language Arts textbooks, will be purchased in 16-17. When Mr. DiGiulio goes over the budget, you'll see we're setting aside a certain amount of money year two and year three, so we will have funds available for another $1 million K-12 textbook adoption. And the last identified need on page 7 speaks of specifically to the ROP and the career tech ed courses. I know that that has been an area that the board has had a great level of interest in maintaining, and in the cases where we can, to increase those, because those are primarily our key electives at our high schools, and we want our students to be career and college ready. So this is our way of making sure that that continues, and that funding will be going away after next year, so we need to have ways to ensure that those courses continue. So you'll see year one is to maintain the current number of ROP and career tech ed courses at each high school and to establish a baseline of courses per student. And year two and year three is to maintain that current number of ROP and CTE courses. Of course, at that point, we need to make sure that we have the funding set aside so we can continue to fund those courses. Moving on to another target that the board is, I think, looking forward to reinstating. Is the reinstatement of the Junior Air Force ROTC program at Lyndhurst High School. It's a program that, when we were making some very significant budget cuts, was eliminated. And so we are looking at setting aside 50% of the startup costs in year one, which is next year, and the other half in year two. And then by year three, we're looking at setting aside 1 year of the estimated encroachment on the general fund, because it does encroach on the general fund. It's not a self-funding program. So you'll see that listed here. Moving on, music was another area that was listed as something that rated highly on all of our information we gathered. And so we want to make sure that we have more students who can access music in our schools. So, again, we can't do it all year one, so what we're looking at is year one bringing on another intermediate school music teacher who would then allow us to build that theater program for the high schools. And then you'll notice year two is to maintain, and then year three is then looking at dropping it down into the elementary schools. And this is all based on funding we hope and have been kind of promised we'll receive, but you know, it's that promise that we're not taking to the bank just yet, but we certainly have plans should that funding come through. K-3 classes, because class size is, again, another issue. We want to make sure that we are able to maintain the average of 24 students per certificated teacher in classrooms K-3. So we have included additional staffing for next year. That'll be reviewed in the budget side. So you'll see maintain for all 3 years. We also have a need, and it was identified in our surveys, for intervention and acceleration classes. I think we have focused on the intervention part, those support classes for our English and our math courses, but we also need to look at what are those courses on that upper end, because we don't want to just teach to the middle and try to bring everyone up to the middle. We want to help those kids on that upper end of the spectrum of academic achievement continue to excel. So it's a balance there. So the goal for year one is to increase as needed the number of intervention and or acceleration classes at a minimum level of 30 section or class periods. And then when we get into years two and three, it'll be going back, reassessing and determining, do we need more, do we need less, and what does that balance look like? So that'll be working very closely with the high school staffs and the middle school staffs. The last identified need on that page 9 talks about students must have access and enroll in a broad course of study, those A through G requirements in career tech ed, and we are looking at just maintaining. I talked before about making sure we have those funds set aside so we continue those courses. We also want to improve student literacy levels because that is the key for all learning. If you can read, you can learn. And so we want to make sure we continue that. And so we're looking at establishing first the baseline for our students reading at or above grade level, and then increase it years 2 and 3 by 3%. As I said before, we don't have a measure just yet, but as those come forward, we certainly will begin to tap into those. Right now, we're looking at the accelerated reader scores, API scores, some of the upper levels that will be receiving that in the high school levels. And as a result, and what we want to do as part of that is to make sure that we are, as a district, providing the library software that will be at all of our school sites that will help to increase and accelerate students' literacy levels. So that is something we're no longer going to be asking to be a site-based funding source. We're asking that it be done at a district level so all schools have access to the web-based accelerated reader program. Of course, we want to improve graduation rates, and so you'll see we have some incremental growth in years 1, 2, and 3, going from 79.5 to 81. We'll see how that goes. If we have huge leaps, great. So we may have to adjust those, but we will move from the 79.5 in 14-15 to 85% by their third year out. We also want to make sure that our high school exit exam proficiency rates improve, and so we want to see improvement in both math and English, and you'll see that happening in years 1, 2, and 3. Student attendance, you know, we need to have students in school regularly, and so we're looking at increasing those percentages, although they are pretty darn good right now. There's always room for improvement, so we want to move from 95.9% in year 1, hopefully up to 97.5. As you will remember, as you get closer to 100%, it becomes more and more difficult. So it will be a challenge, but certainly we want every student in school every day. We'll be looking at API scores because, you know, it's about the academics, and so we'll establish a baseline, and then years 2 and 3, looking at improving that by 5% each year. And we also want to make sure we're increasing our advanced placement and early assessment program passing rates. That's specific to the high schools because we want to see the students taking those advanced placement courses passage rate increasing each year, as it shows in years 1, 2, and 3, along with our early assessment exit exam passage rates, because we want our students to be able to start college, taking college-level courses, and not having to take some of those remedial courses. That's a sign of real success for our high schools when we can get that percentage higher. I do have to say there's a bit of a disclaimer on year 1 in our ELA. There were some difficulties with scoring those exams, and so they had to pull those and hand score them, and so we don't really have accurate results just yet. As soon as we get those, we'll be able to plug those percentages in. I will guarantee it's higher than 0. We want to make sure we're improving our English learner reclassification because, remember, one of our target populations are our EL students. So we are looking at increasing by 2% each year in years 1, 2, and 3, the number of students that are reclassified in our district. Goal 2, which is to enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our schools provide a physically and emotionally safe environment that is culturally responsive to all students. And here is one of, I think, the board's priorities as well, which is to restore the deferred maintenance budget. And so we will be able to go back and develop a plan about how we're going to use those dollars, and to make sure that we have a plan in place so that we spend them wisely, those dollars, each and every year. So you'll notice the first year it talks about establishing the budget, and then it's maintaining it years 2 and 3. We want to make sure that we are in compliance with our safeguarding our assets and funding, and I think Ryan will speak more to this, but we are looking at the need to hire an internal auditor and compliance officer. Since our district, we write our own checks, and we need some checks and balances in place, we believe that having someone at the district level who continues to monitor that student body as well throughout the year, it will reduce some of our external auditor costs and will be in some ways cost savings, although it's not 100% savings. But it's one of those controls that we need to have in place. And I do appreciate Ryan's new eyes looking at our financial checks and balances to make sure that we have everything in place. The other item there is to hire a categorical specialist, and that is for the financial end of it. We do receive significant categorical dollars every year, and as much as we'd like to think that the accounting department can handle that, when Doug Swift retired, we didn't replace him, and certainly it has been a stress on all departments trying to make that work. And you can talk to principals who have struggled getting their budgets together and reflecting what they've spent, and yeah, they're all nodding their heads. So yes, we won't belabor that one, will we, Jamie? No. We also, on page 13, want to increase the health services for our students with ongoing health issues. So we would like to decrease the number of students per nurse, and so at this point we're looking at next year adding one additional full-time nurse. We want to increase counseling services at the secondary level first. We heard a lot about not just helping students find the classes they need to be ready for graduation in 4 years when they arrive at the high school doors, but to provide some social and emotional counseling. So we are looking forward to bringing on one intermediate school counselor at this point, I think is what we decided was going to happen, and I'll double check that in a minute, but we do want to increase those services. The next one on here is the increased positive behavior interventions and supports. We heard, and you've heard, from the sites that have the program that participated in the Placer County Office of Ed grant for the positive behavior program. I think we have five schools, maybe six, that participate in that program, and we have many others that want to come on board. Our principals and the support staffs at the schools have worked very hard to keep those programs running, and it is one of the programs that you can actually see the improvement in student attendance, the lowering of student discipline, and just an overall feeling of wellness at the school site. So we would like to have someone at a district level who can help support the school sites, help organize some of those rallies and events that they have that are so key to the success of that program. The last one on this page is looking at increased attendance clerks and library clerks, another area that not only the board has supported in the past and requested to come back, but also something that the sites and the parent groups mentioned in their comments to us. So we want to look at meeting or exceeding all of the accountability percentages, and so there are ways that we're going to look at that: staffing records, accountability measures as defined in Section 1. And so the way we do that is we're going to hire the additional staff necessary, and the breakdown will be in the budget part of it. We also want to increase administrative support. As you all know, we have schools that are very large who have single administrators. Part of our initial goal was to have more administrators at every single site, and then Romero said, but wait a minute, Gay, in EDCO there is an administrative ratio, and so based on the number of students in our district, we have to stay within that ratio. And currently that ratio would allow for us to bring on 1.5 additional administrators. And we, you know, at this point, we just would like to see that increased. Not sure how that plays out just yet, but certainly we hope that the board and community will continue to support that. We also want to have access to technology, and so it's the number one thing right now, especially with our new testing system, which is all online. Having wireless access at all of our school sites is very, very important, and so Brian is working on that as we speak, and a number of sites have come online, and the rest of them will continue, and so you'll see maintaining that in years 2 and 3. We want to make sure that we address the student achievement and accountability management system needs that our district has. So we want to make sure that we have those pieces in place. And so you'll notice in the last column it says the district assessment and accountability data management system will continue to update and improve, be improved to provide immediate student assessment data. Report cards and benchmark assessments will be paced to the instruction. So it's once again making sure we are all technologically savvy. We have the software that will allow us to generate those reports with minimal work on everyone's part. And then the last goal is to increase parent, family, and community involvement. And we have some very specific ways that parents said they would like to have us increase our outreach to them, and the number one was to have translators who could translate district and site documents in Spanish and in Hmong. And so we have set in this goal to hire 1.5 district translators and interpreters. That was brought forward by the principal saying, but wait a minute, sometimes we need interpreters, especially for some of our discipline matters and some of the other important meetings that we have with parents. And so we would like to make sure that we have that in place. So it would be right now, based on the numbers of students, it would be one full-time Spanish speaker and around a half-time Hmong speaker. And so sites would have access to those translation services, as well as having them available to do the school messenger calling. As you know, you're familiar with that. This is ongoing, and so it continues the school messenger service. Board members receive messages from me a little more frequently as the year goes on, but we also need to be able to translate that into Hmong and Spanish, and this system allows us to do that. So depending on the primary language that parents select when they fill out their enrollment cards, that's the language that they receive the messages in. So having someone readily available to help with that would be immensely helpful. Okay, that is the LCAP plan as we see it today, based on the input, as I said before, by a whole host of groups, and working with Ryan, we think we have all of these covered within our new funding stream, and at this point, I think Mr. Crawford, you could open it up for the public hearing and ask if there are questions.
Most definitely, and thank you, Dr. Todd. I'd like to open up anyone who'd like to come to the podium or any of the board members to have any questions or concerns on the proposed LCAP. Please come up, give us your name and for the records.
Hi, I'm Inga Schleschler, the president for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I was part of what I thought was an LCAP committee. I apologize. I normally don't apologize before I start talking, but I did not receive this information until late yesterday afternoon. And so my presentation isn't up to what it's normal. I don't have a PowerPoint. I didn't Photoshop you guys into anything. So it's just some scratch paper. Association members have some concerns and some questions, and first I just wanted to say that the LCFF is a different way of calculating how much money the district gets. It's not an additional separate pot of money. This is the money that you have, and if you have something that you would like to spend your money on and it's not in the plan, you can't. And so I would really like you to spend a good long time looking at this and make sure that if there's something that's going on in the district right now that you really want to see keep happening, it has to be in the plan or it won't. If there's something you would like to see happen in the future and it's not in there, it won't. So given that, there was some committee input that was not addressed about how the funds would be spent. And our committee members were told at our last meeting that we would receive a draft of the plan before now that we would have a chance to look over it. The only reason that I'm here tonight and some of my colleagues is because yesterday afternoon I emailed Dr. Todd and asked, so when are we going to get a copy of that draft? And she said, oh, it's not been on the website. And because of the title on the website, that's how I found out that there was a meeting tonight. End of the school year, it was probably mailed to my site, but on Friday the 13th, my last day, and the secretary was kind of busy probably and didn't put it in my box. So, but nobody else I knew, I've been in training the last 2 days, nobody else was aware of this meeting either. So that being said, I did go on and look at board meeting dates, and this date's not on that because it's a special meeting. Also, it's a different time from regular meetings, so I would say that the public hearing is not exactly well promoted. Specifically from our largest concern is that I've only had a day to look at it, so maybe I'm missing it, but no place in this plan does it allow for attracting and retaining high-quality teachers through competitive salary and benefits. And it's not like you have a separate pile of money somewhere from which you can do salary and benefits. The LCFF is your funding source for that. And considering that other than board members and Dr. Todd, everybody has had cuts every year due to the increase in health coverage or health premium cost. We've been cut every year. You probably aren't aware that those board members, I don't see Mr. Miller here, so I think it's everybody else who's up there, you're paid about $2,000 a month by getting the health coverage. Now it's gone up. So in the plan, did I miss it? I mean, was there something in there about that?
If you look at page 22, the last item that says goal one, and it says funding source LCFF, it has dollar signs, it says to be determined.
Wait, page 22? I have on page 22 C and D. Looks like this. Maybe my 22 is different from yours.
It's what was on the website. It says under pupil achievement, pupil engagement, school climate.
Oh, that's my 21.
Okay.
Okay.
It's that last one that says it is, if you look over to year one, it says funding source LCFF, and it has couple of dollar signs, and it says to be determined / negotiations.
But so that's not an increase to salary, that's an increase in instructional time.
It's a negotiated item, and so that will be something that Mr. DiGiulio will talk about a little bit when we get into the actual financial piece of that.
I remember at the meeting, we were all of the different unit folks were there, all the classified and us, and I know that we were concerned about everybody's
right and every single
quality
group
attractive.
Asked
so
for
I don't see how
increased salary or total compensation. And so with the LCAP, we have to address how is that going to specifically improve student achievement. So that's why it still says negotiations,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that will be kind of hammered out, looking at.
Just so,
in the
to make it very clear in the plan, and just so you know, the dude whose name I can't remember, sorry, at Ed Services, which is Educational Services, gave the wording to Yuba City that said, yes, you absolutely can use LCFF for increasing salary. And the wording was what I printed out of the paper and handed to you at that meeting, to attract and retain high-quality employees, not just teachers.
Right. And if that verbiage needs to change through negotiations, it certainly can, but it's not something that we're going to put a dollar amount to tonight.
Yeah, I'm not asking about a dollar amount. I'm asking for the verbiage to be in there, that one of the things that this district would like to do is to attract and retain high-quality employees to include all units.
Okay, so noted.
Okay. But thank you for pointing out that spot for me. Okay. In your presentation, you helped a little bit with definitions for what VPSS and CMIS are on that page. For me, it's page 6, about all teachers being Title II highly qualified. A concern that we have there is what the definition of highly qualified is, because the state says we have to have a credential, but highly qualified doesn't necessarily mean you have a credential. And it's a No Child Left Behind old term. So we're concerned about having the old terminology there and would like to have more detail. On the next page, for me it's page 7, on the educators need ongoing training, principal evaluations, observations, we would like to know how the baseline would be established, if it's part of evaluation, in which case it would need to be negotiated if you're changing how we're evaluated. But then very confusing to us was who will deem me, for example, as personally effective, and are we only caring about, because it says teachers personally and administratively deemed effective, or will DEO staff and administrators also need to be personally effective? And who figures that out? So we would like to have that clarified.
Did you like the part that said multiple venues for professional development?
I did.
See, I got a smile out of
Yeah, I'm looking for ARCO Arena or whatever it's called now, Sleep Train. Maybe we could do it during the Fleetwood Mac concert. And then in the professional development, quite often it mentions Common Core, and there's some confusion. We want Common Core PD, but Lenny Tate has told us that there is no more Common Core training to come, that all Common Core training is over. I could have a conversation with you specifically about the particular thing, but...
And as you know, we work closely with you on professional development and what that looks like, so certainly that could be continued in our conversations.
Yeah, just some...
We do work collaboratively on that.
Just that some has been denied because it had the words Common Core in it, some site-based stuff, so we need to fix that, especially if it's in our LCAP. Do you have an idea of how you would deem teachers personally?
We can talk about that.
Okay.
With Romero.
Okay.
As I said, this is a draft, and so we certainly can talk about what works.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the State Board of Education's goals, so what that looks like, we certainly can chat about that.
Okay. Then the next thing is... I'm wondering how this would happen, the 100% of students having access to the state and board-approved textbooks. We have no adoption for language arts. We don't have the approved material, so how are we going to be doing that?
Well, currently we have to meet the one book per student for the core subject areas, which we do for the Williams Act, so that'll be the same measurement. Mm-hmm. We'll use our Common Core textbooks for math, and every student will have a book.
Right.
And as language arts comes forward, that's our goal, and that's why we're setting funding aside, so we'll be able to purchase those. So right now, we're using the materials that are available to us,
right,
and we'll continue to make sure that we have sufficient materials for every student based on what's currently available from the state.
So what's currently available from the state for this next year.
Mm-hmm.
Is open court considered?
Yes, it's still approved by the state. Mm-hmm. There is no new language arts adoption materials out there. You know that, Inga. We've talked about that. It's a few years out, so we're not going to...
Well, we were in the middle of an adoption, and then we...
But those materials are not Common Core state standards aligned materials, nor are they any longer in alignment with the new direction of
yeah.
the state. So
okay,
it would
I was
make
just
sense
concerned
to purchase
about the
100%
those. Thing.
Yeah.
So,
unless
yeah.
you'd like us to take $1 million from somewhere else for that next level of adoption. I don't think we're ready for that.
I could find it.
Yeah.
No, okay. And just on the need, when it says need, like ROP and CTE courses, when it says that there's a need, then how is maintaining addressing a need?
The need is that we need to have the ROP and CTE courses. That funding goes away after next year, and if we don't identify it as a need to maintain and continue those courses, then the funding isn't available for those.
Okay.
So we're
so
setting
maybe it
that
would
funding
be,
aside.
So maybe it would be clearer just to put after need, continue ROP and CTE courses, because it makes it sound like there aren't any right now, and if and we need
yeah.
them.
And it goes into more detail in the actual budget when we set those funds aside,
right.
but certainly... That's
okay.
something to consider.
Hey, nothing on this page. Music. Is K-8 going to be the only one to get that?
At this point, we're looking at an intermediate school music teacher for Yuba Gardens, specifically, so they have a feeder program for the Lyndhurst High School Band. McKinney currently has a position
so,
that feeds into the MCAA program. So we're trying to build the feeder program.
Okay. And so on the improving percentage of students enrolled over the years here, is that having more teachers of that? Or how do you...
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Increasing,
yeah.
like that teacher gets...
Ultimately, we're going to have to increase the number of teachers
okay.
as the program drops down into lower grade levels.
And then I'm not high school, but... high school is concerned about on that intervention acceleration classes where it has with the current staffing formula. Is it the current staffing formula that's going to be used or the correct staffing formula? Because Mark Allgaier had a different idea of staffing formula for high school than what high school teachers feel works.
Currently, the high schools are what we would deem to be overstaffed. So with that in mind, we did not reduce the high school staffing for next year. And within that ratio, they're going to be looking at implementing, and I've talked with the high school principals, it's doable to start looking at some of those support classes and some intervention classes with their current level of staffing, which I want to
so
say
it would
is
not-
nine, Terry, was it? I think it was nine total overstaffed based on the funding formula.
So the increase, sorry, the increase in the number of intervention acceleration classes at a minimum level of 30 sections slash class periods. So you're increasing 30 periods by using existing staff.
We're going to maintain the 30 periods that currently exist.
Oh.
And that within that staffing formula, it is our hope that they will be able to add acceleration and support classes. We want to maintain that minimum level of 30 class periods.
Okay.
And we believe they can do that as they do with the current level of staffing.
Okay. And then the district considers that currently students have access and enroll in a broad course of study?
We believe that there is a wide variety of options for them, but it can certainly, and we hope, it will increase.
Okay. I just asked because that one is another, how does maintaining it address the need?
Well, it's making sure that we continue funding so those courses can continue to be offered and increased as funding becomes available.
Thank you. improves student literacy levels. Is the district going to be using the Common Core definition of literacy? And thank you for answering the question about accelerated reader. That's going to be funded by the district, not SITE, and everybody's going to have it. That's awesome.
Yes.
But literacy is different from reading at grade level, according to Common Core, because there's literacy in all the different subject areas and things. So do you mean literacy there?
We're looking at the broad definition of it, so...
And then on my page 11, API scores need to improve. There is no API until 2016-17 for a baseline. So what's the metric that's going to be used for next year and the year after that? Because it's supposed to increase by 5%, but there's no API.
The high schools continue to give a portion of that exam, which generates an API through their California High School Exit Exam. And so that's what we're looking at. And as new measures come along, we'll use that.
Okay.
Remember, this is a document that is fluid, and it is reviewed every single year. And as new things come down or things change,
right,
we'll certainly change that to meet what's currently happening.
Right. And I just want to assure you that I would... obviously have had a meeting with you and come, and we could have talked about all this and not
here. But this
here,
is what this meeting is for, so
yeah,
it's perfectly
so,
fine.
Yay.
Absolutely.
Okay. The one after that, the student achievement needs to improve, and the metric is CASP and local benchmark. The state has specifically said to not use the first 2 years of testing results. So we're wondering what other measures of student achievement we might use for that. Well, maybe we could include something.
Well, we're looking at benchmark assessments, a whole host of ways to measure. At this point, we're in limbo. We don't really have an academic measure that is consistent throughout the state, so we're going to look at whatever we can use to help teachers identify students who need additional instruction. You know.
Could it be appropriate to add to this document and other measures so that as we're moving along,
yeah,
we could use something.
I don't have an objection to that.
Some of that
sure.
stuff is a yuck. Okay.
It's just the county offices. And what are those other measures? But that's okay. We can leave it in there.
Tell them to talk to me. Increasing the advanced placement early assessment program passing rates. We're kind of wondering who provided that input. And whose site is at 26% now, because they couldn't all possibly be at 26%.
It's a district average.
The district average.
Uh-huh. It's not specific to a school site. It's district averages, and it's from the CDE website.
Okay. So then when you're, when you're looking at it, if somebody, like right now, let's just throw in a number out there, is at 10, and they go up to 20. They didn't go up to 30, which is what the... this year says, but as long as the average,
right,
then you consider yourself.
And
okay.
As always, we can reevaluate and determine whether that was a realistic goal or not, and we'll look at that because we want to continue to help students improve. We're picking numbers now that seem reasonable, but when we start looking at the actual test results, we may need to modify those. We may need to step them up. They may want to be at 40%. And not 30.
Right.
So.
Actually, that was sort of one of the basic questions that people had was, do we actually have to have some of the specific numbers
now
in this document, because it kind of ties you to something that...
They're looking for a measurable goal, and if you set what seems to be reasonable, whether
yeah.
it be 2%, 5%, 20%, you look at that each year and you adjust based
okay.
on how your students are doing.
On the improved EL reclassification, EL students have been a really strong focus for a long time in this district, and everybody, every year we talk about how can we
mm-hmm.
do this. Is there something specific that we're going to be doing differently? I mean,
yeah.
do we have like a new program or a new teacher or a new...
Did you just volunteer? No. At this point, we're going to go with what we currently have, and we'll continue to...
Wait, maybe.
Move for that improvement. There you go. We'll talk later.
Okay. I heard in your description of the new positions at the district office that apparently the categorical specialist is going to really relieve a lot of work for people. My question in coming in is, why do we need to hire two more district office personnel in order to maintain facilities? Because, you know, we can relate. We feel kind of overworked. Our class sizes have been increasing. The demands, the learn about Common Core, the hurry up and learn technology, all the hurry up and, you know, figure out what it is you're doing for a report card. We need more help, too. But I guess one of the concerns is, have we been out of compliance and have we not been secure? I mean, how have we been making sure that those things, that compliance has happened so far?
Right. And Mr. DiGiulio will go more into that when he gets his budget presentation and the need for those positions.
Okay. On the health services for students with ongoing health issues, that's where I was asking if we were required to have specific numbers here because we are in the midst of bargaining this particular issue. And
we just want to make sure we're increasing the services because we have more students who have critical health care needs, and so that's our goal.
And we were wondering how the ratio on the counselor, how the ratio can decrease when there's only one intermediate counselor getting hired and no secondary.
Well, right now there are zero students who are receiving counseling services. So
and
we will decrease, so there's however many students at the intermediate. It's a first step in bringing some of those needed services to our middle school students.
And is that person, what is that person? Because is that a counselor, social, emotional health counselor? Is that a unit member in the way that high school counselors are unit members for us now?
I believe so, yes.
And what will the PBIS coordinator do at the district level that the current person doing that doesn't already do?
We don't currently have one. Jolie Carrion has been overseeing, but she does not coordinate the activities at the school site. She doesn't provide any support services for those folks who currently have the program and are moving into year two, and the other sites who would like to add the program but don't have the resources available.
One of the people whose site has that program was saying that most of the tasks would be site-specific, coordinating things on-site, and
mm-hmm.
with a person at the site.
Yeah, well, we can't add 12 PBIS coordinators, so this would be someone who is housed at the district but will be out at the individual school sites supporting them in their efforts to bring this program to the students. They won't be assigned to a specific site, although they will work with the sites who currently have the program and those that would like to bring the program on board.
Yeah, we weren't talking about having a coordinator at every site, but having an extra duty for a teacher at the site that could be responsible at the site level. And
right. As the program grows, Jolie Carrion had agreed to help, but it's far beyond what she's able to do in her current capacity. And so we need someone who can come in and help the sites, and that's something the sites have supported. And the parents and the teachers and just about everybody put PBIS on the charts as something they wanted to see maintained and to grow throughout the district.
Yes, that's what I've heard, too.
Yeah.
On the increasing attendance clerks and library clerks, love that. Concern is that library clerks, are they going to be responsible for meeting literacy standards? Because it says on a different part, that they would be helping with the literacy standards and they're not qualified to teach.
No, they won't be teaching, but certainly they'll be a support, as they currently are. And we need more of them.
On access to technology, who will select the software?
For the data management?
On, this is my page 14. It's under increased administrative support. There's access to technology. Has wireless access points for technology available on all school sites. Academic software will be purchased to improve keyboarding literacy and mathematical skills. That software.
Right. That'll come probably from the technology committee, working on those things with our current teachers and looking at keyboarding and some of those other programs that our kiddos need, as a lot of teachers have noticed as they try to complete their online assessments.
And
I'm not picking at Inga.
Yay. We wanted to make clear that access isn't simply having it in your hand. Having that software and a wireless connection and a device in your hand doesn't make it accessible if you don't know how to use it. Mm-hmm. And professional development.
Right. And that is part of the professional development offerings that will be included as the technology piece.
And then on the very next one, Student Achievement Accountability Management System, it says in the far right column, report cards and benchmark assessments will be paced to instruction. Is that district-wide pacing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Common Core specifically says not to do that.
Okay. What's that?
Not to pace the curriculum?
Right.
Ah, okay.
Teachers that want to do a pacing for how they want to instruct their class is encouraged, of course, but not. It's not the old system.
Right. That's. We're looking at for those staff members who want that option to provide it for them.
So it's not going to be a mandated pacing.
No.
District-wide.
It's something that will be developed and we'll work on it together, Inga.
Okay, awesome. Those translators. Will teachers be able to call on those, make an appointment for assistance, maybe parent conferences, class newsletters?
Hopefully. That would be the goal. Depends on what the demand is on 1.5 people throughout the district, but
yeah.
Certainly those skills will be needed in specific schools and perhaps and not in others. So it's those who have the populations that require those translations that we have first use
well,
of those.
I know that a lot of people currently use Google Translate as a free way to translate.
Yeah. There's something about the human element.
Some of what comes across is really funny.
Mm.
I have an uncle in Germany who writes to me frequently, and he'll write in German, and then he'll translate it, Google Translate, just, you know, for my benefit, and I can read the German better. okay, so then on page 18, where it has the $600,000 for staff development days, is this an additional $600,000?
This is the current cost of those four contracted professional development days annually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's those 4 days?
Yes.
We're a lot cheaper when we have CTA come. Just saying. Except for the air conditioning was killing us today. We were frozen and yesterday. That was a lot of energy spent. The $500,000 in instructional materials for English language arts, what's that going to in next year?
That's going to be put earmarked for the 2016-17 adoption year. It's around, as you know, $1 million to adopt a curriculum K-12.
So
in some cases, it's a little more than that, so we're lucky if it's only $1 million.
So then when it says instructional materials, English language arts, $500,000.
It's setting
in
money aside.
14-15, that just means set
it's
that
setting
aside.
It aside. Mm-hmm.
Maybe set aside could be added to that box, and that would make it clearer. What is the current program through SCOE that we're going to maintain? Under pupiling, let's see, it's next to the last row on my page 18. Continue to provide programs and services which enrich students' educational experience. With that is 3 FTE, grades K-3, athletics activities, mm-hmm. 50,000, maintain current program through SCOE.
What's the question?
She wants to know
what is
current
that
program
current program
for SCOE.
Oh.
Let me show you. I have a suggestion. How about we table that and we'll go back and look, because I'm not sure at this point.
We have a program. Oh, here it was. The other question about library clerks. My page 19. It's and this is what I got off the district's website yesterday, so I don't know what's changed that's changed the page numbers, but the service is continue to provide support for existing school libraries and expand services to support Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
How do library clerks support Common Core? And that's back to that question about how will they support the literacy?
Thank you.
They will be teaching them how to do research. So the teachers are in there at the...
We'll clarify that so it reads a little more succinctly.
And then on the nurse, I'm glad that there's a plan for another nurse, and I hope that there's a plan for more nurses. The recommendation is that we have one nurse to 657 students. We currently have 1 to 5,000, adding another one, you know, a little bit less because we're not quite at 10,000, but going to 1 to 3,333. Is still kind of overwhelming. I hope that we're able to continue the agreement we had with them.
Absolutely.
All three of them. Okay. I think you answered this question. This is about that one FTE intermediate counselor. Will that person be at one site only?
No.
So, will...
It'll be several days at Yuba Gardens, several at McKinney, and one at Foothill currently.
So middle schools only?
Yes, at this point in time, with the hope to bring more.
Okay. And that half a mental health, I mean, I think that's funny.
What?
Half a mental health person.
Yeah. Well, depends on which half you're
in. I'm wondering
in.
If that's my job, too.
Yeah. No, that would be moving the half-time person to a full-time status, so that will give us 2 mental health clinicians in the district.
Okay.
Currently we have 1.5.
And how are they accessed by teachers who know that they have somebody that needs help?
It's through the pupil services office. So contact Tony Marquez or Jed Nunes, and they'll be happy to get that set up for you.
I think that we could probably help a lot of students if the process on how to make that connection were sent out.
Okay.
Email, but people know how to do that. That what's not on here are counselors for the high school, and that need is huge. So if we can have that included, that would be awesome. When I was in high school, I thought the high school counselor was somebody there to talk to you about your problems.
Not so much anymore.
And I don't think that our high school counselors have time to talk about graduation and applications to college and what classes you need to take as much as they need.
Sure.
And we definitely have a need for that social emotional let's prevent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Prevent violence issues. You answered that one already. Okay, this is interesting. This is page 21 on mine, so I'm thinking it must be 22. It's next to the last page. There's just two little rows there. An increase in learning time is not going to cost anything. And adding instructional time is going to cost whatever we negotiate. How does increasing learning time, and what's the difference between instructional time and learning time? And how is it free?
Yeah, Lenny helped with this, so I'm looking to her. It's like, oh, fresh my memory. I don't know. We'll get you an answer on that. How's that?
Okay, that works good. I did not have time to go through the entire LCAP for the Charter Academy. I don't want to get up here again. I'm assuming you're having a separate.
It is separate.
Thank for that. I just wanted to say that from the little bit that I looked at, I'm glad that all the teachers are going to be credentialed, so we don't have to file a grievance on that. And I know that there are concerns, but we haven't had time to look at it. So I'm hoping that you'll continue to accept some input after tonight.
Absolutely. And that input would need to go to Mr. Malone for the Charter Academy, and for the Marysville District would be to me. Absolutely.
Awesome.
This is just the start of gathering input and people looking at it and making suggestions and recommendations.
Although on the 24th you're adopting it.
Yes, we are.
So between now and the 24th, mm-hmm. anything that's going to be said.
You've done amazing in just the short period of time you've had it. So.
Yeah,
and I know
if I have to have it in writing to you right now, I just have scribbles on this paper. Do you want me to hand this in?
Are you comfortable doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Because hopefully it'll coincide with my notes and we'll. And if I have questions, I know where to find you.
And we're not recorded.
Yes, we are.
You're recorded.
For this one, we are, because, you know, if we had suggestions or recommendations, we want to make sure we had a record of that. So when I go back to transcribe all of it, I've got a second set of ears to go back to.
Thank you. Before I sit down, did anybody have a question for me?
No, you came well prepared. Brought some good points.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Stop making PowerPoint.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
I
have a good summer. This is a public hearing, and first I'd like to thank the cross-section of administrators, elementary and secondary, and so I know it to some of you it might seem like a hodgepodge of music, bringing it back, attendance clerks, ROTC, but in talking with all of you, it seems that there was a need, there's a desire. This is a time now, if you want to, please come up to the podium. You might have heard things about school board members, but most of us don't bite. Well, none of these guys. So if you'd like to give us any input, this would be the time now. Please, thank you.
Okay, I'm Don Fry. I'm a teacher here. Most of you know me. But luckily, I haven't had to go to many school board meetings lately, but you probably remember from when I was school board, UTA president, got to go to all the meetings for about 3 years up here. Inga had a chance to go through what our team looked over, and so I'm not going to go over that whole thing with you. Those were the specifics. What I'm really going to address you is more the philosophy behind what we're doing here. I think there's a real danger as we're going into the Common Core to kind of fall back on some of our old practices. And Inga alluded to some of those when she was talking about things like pacing, when we're talking about the old ways that we used to do things. And, you know, we all have a tendency to fall back into what's comfortable. And we're used to kind of being driven from the top down, quite frankly, here at this district. We really complained when the state was doing that to us as a district, saying, hold it, we know what's best for us. And I think as we're going through and working on this plan, we need to remember that it's people at the sites, whether they're the teachers, whether they're the administrators, that really deal with our students on a day-to-day basis, and we're looking at what's best for them. And so some of the things that Inga went through, I think it's really important that what I noticed there was a lot of emphasis on teachers, but sometimes I want to make sure that what we're going through and doing professional development for teachers, one thing I noticed that wasn't really in their address too much was PD for our administrators on how they're going to be working with this new paradigm we're working at. Our district office here, how are we going to go through and change things here to better serve things at the local level? And I think we really do need to start looking site by site what we're doing, and are we really focusing on all the needs of our students? Because the needs at each of our schools are a little bit different. A couple things that Gay said kind of concerned me. I'm sure it was just in the way that she said it, because when I heard, like, well, we're going to put our interpreters to the schools that need the most help. Well, if I have one Spanish-speaking student at my school and he needs an interpreter, he should be able to get that. Instead of saying, well, you're not at a school where there's 50 Spanish-speaking people, so we're not going to be able to look at that need. So I'm sure that's not the way that you meant it, but that's the way it came about when you said it's the sites that need it. So I'm just...
with 1.5, we're going to have to prioritize and first come, first serve, who sends in memos that need to be rewritten, letters, whatever that might be. So it's not realistic to think that 1.5 is going to be enough for every single student who is a second language learner, but it is a start.
Yeah, like I said, my concern is when we have second language learners at other sites, and the you know, let's face it, we live in a time of litigation, so you're going to have parents saying, hold it, because my student comes to this site, they're not getting these services. So it's just something to think about while we're going through and looking at these plans. How are we going to make sure that every student that needs these services are being, you know, they're being serviced? So that's really, really important, because every child in my classroom, every child in every one of these teachers' classrooms, you know, they're important. And so I just want to make sure we don't have students falling through the cracks as we're going through and putting this plan together. And I think the other thing that was really important that Inga addressed was the whole thing about when you're talking about pacing guides. One of the things that we're talking about here under Common Core is we're being asked as teachers to go out and try new things, to experiment, to try to bring all this new stuff into the classroom. And let's face it, if you're out there being evaluated constantly, if you have somebody looking over your shoulder constantly and not allowing you the chance to make mistakes, you're not going to grow. I mean, that's what we do for our students, is that we give them the chance to make mistakes in our classroom. Go through, and we're going to try things that aren't going to work, quite frankly. That's what's going to happen as we're trying these new things. And we're asking our teachers now to go out on a limb and say, hey, you've never done this stuff before, especially for many of the teachers that have been teaching only since we've had scripted texts, We're asking them to now go through and put together a curriculum. We're asking them to do things that they've never had to do before. And it's going to be a learning process. It's going to be a growth process. And I think the professional development part is something that we really, really need to look at. Those four PD days that we have in our contract, those are great for a normal year. And I really appreciate and applaud the district for adding those two additional days this year, because they really are needed. Because now we're asking teachers to not learn the technology, but turn around and teach the technology to their students. We're being asked to do things like have our students do PowerPoint presentations. And if you think about it, you wouldn't ask a math teacher to go through and say, well, okay, I know that you don't know anything about math, but you're going to go through and teach math now to these students. But that's, in effect, what we're doing with some of the technology with our teachers. We're saying, we know you don't know how to do this, but you're going to turn around and teach this to your students. And so, like I said, I really want to applaud the district for going through and giving us these last couple days to go through and look at the technology and look at how we do this. And I really, really hope as we go through this whole process that two things that are happening, and Gay addressed one of them. One is that we're flexible and that we're able to go through and look at what's happening, and we're able to go through and adjust what's happening. And we also need to look at what's effective and what's not effective. One thing that kind of concerned me is you said, well, we'd like to add more assistant principals, but the state's saying we have a cap on this. So we're actually going to the most administrators that we can have. Yet when we look at things like class size, we're saying, well, what does the state mandate that we have? What is the most students that we can put in here? Okay, so I think we want to make sure that we keep that in mind as we're going through and making these decisions. Because when we look at class size, it's like, well, the state says we can have 24 students in this class, so we're going to have 24. You wouldn't do that with the administrators. You just said that. You said, well, we can only go to what the state allows us to have. I think we need to start having that same philosophy when we're looking at class size, not just in K-3, but across the board. What is most effective for our students? And what's going to work the best? Okay. So, to me, I just wanted to make a broad statement here about our philosophy as we're going through this and what we get from listening to teachers. Inga did a great job of going through point by point, but I think more important than all the little, points here or there, I think our overriding philosophy and the way that we approach this is going to determine how successful we are as we adopt the Common Core and as we move forward. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Now, we really appreciate you coming in with your ideas. We're just like the rest of you. If you didn't come in and then next year you say, what's this? Would say, hey, we had you had the opportunity to speak, so I appreciate you doing it now. Would anyone else like to come up to the podium?
I left something out.
Sure.
That's a real quick one. There's a part about class size where it has the average K-3 being 24-1. Because of how the district does that average, it's important that there be all included with that a cap, because in the sites that have transitional kindergarten as a center, they could go down to 9 kids in a class or 10 or whatever, and then all the K-1-2-3 classes, their size increases. So you could have, like at Cedar Lane, there were kindergarten classes that were at 28-29 when the transitional K class was at 13, because it's not K at an average of 24 and 1 at 24 and 2 at 24. It's transitional K through third. So there needs to be a cap.
No, I've wondered that myself. No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I would concur. And next, how are you?
I'm good. I'm Molly McKay. I'm a teacher at Kynoc, and I'm also Secretary of MUTA, but I just wanted to really address the whole idea that the process of involving stakeholders, Inga said it was not well promoted. I think that's a huge understatement. We have different perspectives on this, I guess. From my point of view, the energy and effort that was put into involving stakeholders has been extremely limited. Teachers were invited to the community involvement meetings that happened. I got a piece of paper about that, but I attended the one at McKinney, and again, our evaluations of the turnout are definitely not aligned. I think there were 30 or 40 people there, and most of them were either administrators, board members, teachers, some of whom were also parents, but there were very few parents, unduplicated parents, if you want to call them that. And whatever involvement happened in this process, teacher involvement, really only happened because a few of us teachers persistently sought out opportunities to participate. In other words, administration didn't work to involve us. We had to keep asking, you know, for opportunities to participate. And so, henceforth, going forward, I really, really hope that there's going to be a much stronger effort at promoting community involvement in this whole LCAP, you know, process. And, like, for example, tonight, who was invited to this meeting and how? I mean, there has to be a public announcement, right?
Yes, it was in the Appeal Democrat.
Appeal Democrat. So I looked for it, you know, I searched on their site and I couldn't find it. But I just think there's, you know, an email to all the teachers, maybe a phone call to the parents in the district. You know, there's got to be ways. Are there any unduplicated parents here tonight? Not one? You know, I mean, that, I know it's difficult to find people who have the energy and interest to come, but I know we can do better than this. I know we can, and I hope we will.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board and give us your thoughts or concerns?
Mr. Crawford, while you're waiting, I have a couple of
questions.
Yes,
sir.
While we're waiting for somebody to come up. On the administrative ratio, Mr. Curran, does that involve directors from the district office? Do they count in that ratio?
Some are, and some are not, and there's a descriptor guide associated with the requirements in order to determine which can be set aside and which are part of the formula.
Okay, thank you. And then on the hiring a new in-house auditor, that one, you know, this is the first time I've seen it. I haven't heard Ryan's presentation yet, so maybe I'm talking out of turn. But, you know, we have had zero findings in 2 years in a row on our audits. So I would question, you know, whether we need to add a new person to the district office when we have showed zero findings for the last 2 years. But Ryan, I haven't had a chance to hear your presentation, so I'll wait, you know, and hold judgment later when I hear that.
Thank you, Mr. Boone. Please.
Hello, my name is Sheree Baker. I am a paraeducator at Lyndhurst High School. And I'm also a parent of two kids at Ella. And I wanted to know, what about the paraeducators? You're talking about teachers and administration, but there's nothing about getting any additional training for us, especially since we're going in blind with this Common Core. We have no training whatsoever, so I was wondering what we were going to do about that.
The way that the state 8 priorities, it's specific to teachers, doesn't mean that we don't plan to have other staff development for our paraeducators, our administrators, and so those will be forthcoming, but based on this LCAP plan, it is specific to teachers.
Okay. That was all I wanted
to
know.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Silks, how are you? Good.
Hi, I'm Monica Oakes, principal at Kynock Elementary School, and I just felt the need to come up here because, well, I found a lot of, you know, everybody's come up with new ideas, which is what's going to happen with this all along, from now until this disappears. We're going to all be coming up with new ideas and putting them in to make it better and better and better. But, you know, when you look at this before it even started, all the little pieces and all the things that have to come together to even make a plan, to make the plan that we just saw, it's a tremendous amount of work for the whole district, for parents, for teachers, for everyone. And I feel like we've had a level of input. Could it be better? I agree with Molly. We're having problems at the school site with apathy of people not showing up. So I get that. But I think we've made a good start. I commend all the people that put in all the many, many, many hours on this. And we will keep evolving. I feel that. I mean, as a principal, we're asked our input all the time. So I just wanted to say that. So good job.
Thank you very much.
One of the other things I'd like to just mention, in working with the Yuba County Office of Education, since they will be looking at all of these LCAP plans that come from Yuba County, they have been sharing with us the trainings they've been going through, what they look for in the plan, and they also shared the fact that the state is going to have the rubric for scoring these LCAP plans from the districts in October of 2015. So this is a document that not everyone is sure what it looks like, what needs to be included, what the measurements look like, so we're all kind of learning together, and it is a living document in the truest sense of the word, where we will go back, we'll evaluate, we'll tweak it, we'll work on it collaboratively, and continue to make it a plan that truly reflects where we as a district want to go. But this is the first stab at doing it. Will we get better? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. And Molly, I would be the first to agree with you. When way back when my kids were at Covalad, Doug Eshman talked me into being site council president, and he would send home 2,000 flyers to the parents. Please attend this very important meeting, because the Title II monies and Title IX monies and everything else involves your children. Parents never came. That was 25 years ago. I don't know why the apathy's there. Not that I'm a big fan of meetings, but I kind of cringe, too, when I hear things like highly qualified. I get flashbacks to No Child Left Behind. Didn't we go through that, jump through that hoop a decade ago?
2014 were all highly
qualified.
And Ms. McKay was correct. Our McKinney meeting was not terribly well attended. We only had 30 people who showed up for that meeting. But at the Yuba Gardens meeting, we had 90.
Oh,
so the turnout was much better, as well as taking it to our DLAC, where we had a very good showing of our second language parents. So,
thank you.
You can call them. It doesn't always mean they'll come, but certainly we'll continue the outreach. And as more people look at it and provide suggestions, we'll move forward to improve.
You just can't resist, can you?
I love a microphone. Love this. Wish mine worked in my classroom. I'm glad the paraeducator came up. That was awesome, because I remember that part of our input, I'm sorry I don't have it all right here, but part of our input at the meeting was that teachers really need our paraeducators to be highly qualified, because when you're in that classroom and you've got a paraeducator coming in for half an hour, you just really don't have time to stop what you're doing with your students, train the paraeducator on what it is you want done in your class. And I know that every class they go into, they have a different expectation from each teacher, has their own thing. And part of that, having highly attracting and retaining highly qualified staff included those paraeducators, so that if they could have better pay, maybe some benefits, maybe more hours, that kind of stuff, that was part of that also. So, because
it was,
who wants to have a 3-hour job where they're, excuse me, but jerked around by all these different teachers and feeling lost? Who's going to stay in that if they can possibly do something else? I think that's my last thing.
I would think, just for self-esteem, if we could, you still do the in-services and stuff, if you could include that, make them feel good.
We will do that as appropriate. So.
Thank you. Yes. Any other comments? If not, then do I have a motion to close the public hearing?
I'll move to close the public hearing.
We have a motion by Mr. Reck. Do I have a second? A second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Pass, one absent, 6 yes.
Lisa's not here, and I'm looking.
I'm right here.
I'm sorry. Keep ahead of Lisa.
Where'd you go?
Okay. Excuse me. A public hearing for MCAA LCAP. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing. Ms. Mom?
Yes. Hello. I'm here to hold a public hearing on MCAA. Because we're a charter school, we also have to have an LCAP. So I want to tell you, first of all, we did a lot of things similar to the district. We are under the district still. We're a dependent charter. We held public hearings of all stakeholders, but it was specific to our school. So some of the things that are done in the LCAP, of course, are much more specific to our school. So the three goals that we chose were, again, the same ones that were under the school, but our stakeholders also wanted college and career readiness, which matched goal one, better facilities and safety in terms of bullying and that kind of thing, which matched goal three, I think it was. Let me look into here. Sorry, I don't have a PowerPoint for you, but let me look here. Yes, enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our school provides a physically and emotionally safe environment that's culturally responsive to all students. And then goal three was increase parent, family, and community involvement in the education of all students. So I think some of the things that we're doing, our school has always been high in most academic areas, and we feel like we're doing well in the arts, but math is always one area that's kind of low with us. So some of the things that you'll hear me talk about here in a minute, it has to do with helping students in the area of math intervention. We also have somewhat of a problem, I would say, with bullying, especially in middle school. So to help address that, at first I was going to just try to do more at our site, and just a plan that we kind of implement with all the teachers and staff, to and including some of the student leadership, to come up with something to address that. But the district is going more and more so with PBIS, which is a program to help with negative behaviors. So we decided to go ahead and purchase that program. We'll be starting that this year. And so that's another thing. Another thing that's different about our plan compared to the district, is that we do have a facilities issue, and we're looking at bringing in running water to two of our existing science classes so that the teachers can perform experiments using running water instead of having to go to the office and bring in jugs or not doing them at all, which will help to engage the students. Also, we'd like to start a fund to save for two more portables each year. We're putting away so much money for that each year. And another thing to notice that's different about our school compared to the district is the achievement metrics. Of course, because we're one school, and this came up earlier with Inga, is that for the district, they're averaging all the scores together and coming up with one score. Of course, for our LCAP, it'll just be our school. So, for example, Casey, math, we do not address just passing rates, but we're looking at proficiency rates. So that's a little bit higher score that we want to see increase by roughly 3% every year. But probably the best thing we can do, instead of going through everything, which I can do if you like, but is to read a little summary. Pretty much it's a summary if you look on page 20. And I will read that and just kind of listen for some of those things. We're looking at adding music classes also and buying drumline equipment for the teachers and also for the students, because we believe they'll be real excited about that. But here we go. You remember when I talk about the teachers, it is voluntary. I don't force anybody to team teach, for example. I'd like to see it, but I do not force them. Okay, so here we go. Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts will engage in several actions designed to provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted populations. The LCFF funds and Common Core money will help us accomplish this. MCAA will support the implementation of Common Core instruction by providing teacher training, professional development, increased collaboration time, which we did a lot of last year by even bringing in subs for the teachers, and materials adoption. English and math teachers will voluntarily, observe each other while making note of effective and engaging teaching practices, and team teach at least once during the school year. EL and other at-risk students will be discussed at these collaborative meetings in order to find ways to engage them, relate lessons to them, and to provide them with needed scaffolding, including help from both student and adult tutors. In my experience is most of the time the teachers, if not all the time, enjoy this. What I run into is sometimes they get pulled out maybe a little too much, and that I'm sensitive to that, and I will allow them to meet sometimes after school with extra duty pay. MCAA will add two additional music classes by paying a teacher to instruct two more music classes. We will also add a drumline class. We at MCAA believe this will help keep even more of our students engaged in academics because they will be able to gain more pleasure and self-esteem from taking the classes they love, building more of a connection to school. This is developing the whole person. Math is the one area that many of our students have difficulty. In order to help students struggling in math, we will hire a retired math teacher to work with many of these students. He will come twice per week for 4 hours each day. Then math teachers will identify struggling students and use a math online intervention program, which we will purchase strategically in order to help these students become proficient. Again, because we believe the arts engages our students in what they love, and because it is time to replace our Mac computers used in our graphic arts classes, we will purchase 10 refurbished, which is about half the cost, Mac computers each year for the next 3 years, replacing the 30 they currently have. We've had several students that we got input from actually reference the graphic arts class and how poorly the Mac computers are running. We will also purchase 10 Chromebooks so that students can research topics, create presentations, write and edit their work, and use an intervention online math program. Then on the next page, we will know we have been successful when our KC math proficiency rate for 10th graders is at 81% or higher, our KC English proficiency rate for 10th graders is at 87% or higher, and standardized test scores in math increase for all subgroups each year after the baseline is set in 2014-15. We also expect our AP exam passage rates to remain at 50% or higher. The EAP English college ready rate is at 41% or higher, and our EAP math college ready rate is at 25% or higher. MCAA also needs to enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our school provides a physically and emotionally safe environment that is culturally responsive to all students. MCAA will save funds over the next several years so that we can add two additional rooms to the campus. This will allow us to add the music classes mentioned previously and also allow other areas of music to expand. Again, this will give all students, but particularly those struggling, a reason to come to school and love it. We also need to add running water, countertops, and sinks to two existing science rooms. This will allow teachers and students to conduct more engaging experiments, thus increasing student achievement for all. And again, bullying is a problem, especially with middle school students, so in order to reduce the occurrence of this and to reduce all negative behavior, we will purchase and implement the PBIS program. Our stakeholders have also said they want to increase parent, family, and community involvement in the education of all of our students. In order to do this, MCAA and the PTSA will save money each year in order to eventually purchase a digital sign. MCAA will save half the funds needed for a digital sign, and the PTSA will fundraise and save the other half. And this will be over several years. They're actually pretty expensive. The digital sign will communicate important meetings, events, and fundraisers. MCAA will also continue to communicate to parents through its newsletter, the school messenger system, and its website. Parent involvement is a crucial part of life at MCAA, and we will be translating into Spanish because we have about 16% of our students speak Spanish at home. Yes. So that's a pretty good summary of it. I don't know if you have any other questions. Anybody?
Any questions, board? Excellent presentation.
Charter schools don't have the same level of requirements as districts do when it comes to the LCAP, but I did ask Mr. Malone to come and explain to you, board members, how they are looking to spend their funding and what their plan looks like, because you are the chartering agency, and so I thought it was a good idea to have him come and present, although it's not required. So thank you very much for being here, Mr. Malone. Okay.
Mr. Malone, I've got one quick question.
Yes.
On the two extra portables that you're saving for, is there space available for those? Have you guys identified spaces for it already?
Yes. Well, I have. And I've met with some board members and staff or district employees. But out by the tennis courts, behind our school where the basketball court is there, which our middle school kids use. That's used exclusively by our kids, and I've measured they could fit as many as five there. So in my opinion, yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. Just a comment. As you know, Bernie and I were on the review panel, and I was just impressed that the person that came down and reviewed, who was a 41-year administrator, said it was one of the best reviews of any school he had ever done over the years. And I stayed for the parent part, and it was just amazing the accolades they gave you. And this man was highly talented, having been done this for 41 years.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you and Bernie for going to that. But really, the credit goes probably to the structure of the school and the setup and having kids come to a place where they want to be, because they can take all the electives they love. So, anyway, thank you.
Yeah, you've got a good staff.
Thanks.
If there's no other comments, then do I have a motion to close the public hearing? So, excuse me.
Just a couple quick questions, because it wasn't clear when I was reading this. And it's both to Gay. And is the district paying for accelerated reader for the charter? Also, okay. Are they going to have that available to them?
If they choose to purchase it, they receive separate funds, and so
that would have
to be in his LCAP if that's in fact what he wanted to do.
Okay, because I was wondering if we were going to now start linking that district-wide, because now you know it's at each individual site, mm-hmm. So I was wondering how that was going to
It's the web-based program, and
right.
So it will be for the sites that we receive funding for. MCAA receives their own funding separately.
Right, I understand that. Because the other thing is, you're talking about a math intervention program. Which math intervention program are you using?
It's one Mary's using. I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah. We looked into it last year. We didn't do it because we didn't have the money. I can let you know.
Okay, I was just curious. Okay.
As far as the elevator reader goes, if I guess you just wanted to do it, I could do it, but I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, because the other thing is, I know the accelerated math has a component that goes there, and it's both a renaissance and just the whole thing about maybe a way to save money there if you're linking it that way. That's the reason for the question.
All right. And no other comments? Do I have a motion?
I'll move to close the public hearing.
We have a motion by Mr. Reck to close the public hearing. Second, please. Second, Mr. Fleury. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. 6 and 0. Business services. Question.
No, wait, we got something else.
Oh, excuse me. Did I miss something here?
No.
Huh?
Okay.
No. Go ahead.
Adopted budget next. Proposed.
Public hearing for 2014-15 proposed adopted budget.
Copy your minutes.
Hurry. Afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
We have to do budget first.
Oh, okay.
Right?
This long meeting. Yeah, we could get the. Would you like to take a 5-minute break, anybody? Well, I'm going to make a quick one,
okay,
Tony.
Okay.
I'll make 3 minutes. Excuse me.
We'll wait till he's out the door, okay? Hey, I'd like to welcome you again for anybody that hasn't met our new addition to our, I guess you would say our staff, our family here. So I'd like to welcome you again, Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Rex. I appreciate this opportunity to present to the board, superintendent, and people in attendance. I promise my presentation won't take more than 2 hours. So no, I'm just kidding. It won't take that long, but we're going to take you through the budget. Feel free to ask questions as I go through this presentation, because you've already asked some questions that are pertinent, and it all relates to the LCAP, because the LCAP is incorporated into the budget. Not everything in the LCAP, obviously, not everything in the budget is part of the LCAP, but the LCAP itself is incorporated into the budget. So as I go through it again, ask questions. So the process of developing the budget, even before you had the LCAP, really talks about what you're trying to accomplish as a district. So I always put the district vision, or what our mission or vision is as a district, because that is what needs to be incorporated into the budget. Our resources need to be spent on what we're trying to accomplish as a district. And the LCAP throws a new wrinkle into that, and that we have to do these additional specific goals that meet state priorities. But again, the budget should encapsulate the entire vision of the district, not just the LCAP itself. But I won't reiterate what our superintendent went over, but again, there are all those priorities are listed in the LCAP and incorporated thereof into the budget. And you could see what priorities are met by what goals. We have broad general goals, and all of these goals are represented by expenditures, as you'll see in the budget. I always like to give this graph to people because it really talks about this is an evolving, ever-changing process. And I know we've talked about, well, we have this plan, and it's going to be subject to change. Well, the budget itself is subject to change. It is a living, breathing document. So if we adopt the budget and the LCAP next week, we're going to move into that adopted budget, and then you go through the entire year. You go first interim, governor's budget proposal, second interim, and so forth. At this whole time, underlying that entire process now is the LCAP and that interactive stakeholder input and engagement process. So we continue to, we'll have this conversation today. We'll have many more conversations on the budget as we change and adapt the budget to meet our needs throughout the year, changing the LCAP year to year, because it's a three-year plan, but it's adjusted and amended every year. So this process doesn't start or end tonight. It just continues, and it will continue and continue. So we'll continue to give the board updates, continue to update the budget and the LCAP. So kind of getting into the factors that help determine and develop a budget, you have your underlying budget assumptions, which we work with many different state and private agencies to get those numbers. We estimate price increases because things do go up, especially in our services and operating expenditures. We look at our historically what we spent money on and where we can make improvements there. Stakeholder input is very important as part of the LCAP process. So collective bargaining units, we need to get their input, and we've got some from one of the bargaining units tonight. We have an advisory committee. There's an English learner committee from a district end. You even have site level committees. Community input sessions you had this year, obviously, and then online parent, staff, and community surveys. And then obviously management review, cabinet and the other administrators, we work with them to help develop this budget and meet their needs. So the assumptions that we have for the proposed budget, it's in your packet. I highlighted the major significant assumptions, and I really highlighted the 14-15 year because what we're talking about is the 14-15 school year and the budget for that year. However, the other 2 years become important in the multi-year projection, which I'll get to later, and the LCAP itself is a three-year plan. But you'll see a lot of assumptions depends on attendance. Attendance determines our funding, obviously. So if we decrease attendance, our funding goes down. If our attendance increases, obviously that increases. Statutory COLA affects the amount. It's built in into the restoration funding under LCFF. So we have to factor that slight increase, even though, again, we're still at lower funding levels than we were a few years ago. Step and column is important, obviously, as employees increase their wages. We have to factor that into our budget. We factor in the gap funding, which is kind of a misnomer. The gap is 28% is actually going to be a little over 29 if the budget gets approved as presented by the legislation. That's not the increase in funding. That's the gap. Remember, it's an 8-year plan that started last year. Well, currently this year still, 13-14 is the first year. The plan is to be fully implemented under Governor Brown's proposal by the year 2020-2021, that school year. So he's trying to do that over 8 years, and obviously the January proposal more than doubled where we thought we would go in that gap. So he's made a lot of progress for us, or the state has, and hopefully that will continue and meet that implementation sooner than the year he first prescribed. COLA for special ed and categorical is important because these are restricted dollars. If they don't have increases, as we have increased costs, you'll have to work on reducing services because you're not covering the increases that come with those. Other factors, lottery revenue is obviously another fund for both restricted and unrestricted that I know there's a lot of talk about how much we get for lottery. And then also our consumer price index, and that kind of relates back to increased cost and increased cost of the goods and services that we purchase as a district to help support our educational services. So kind of getting more into the specifics of the LCAP, Part 3 really lines out the budget piece, the action, services, and expenditures. But before I get into that, I'll talk to you a little bit about the funding. And you'll see in this graph, we show where we were in revenue limit. And revenue limit was our prior system that was last year, so 2012-2013. LCSS first year was this year, and you can see there was an additional $3.9 million. Well, next year, our funding is extremely, you know, beneficial to this district and to many districts that have a high targeted population, a subgroup population, where we have the 83%, as our superintendent indicated. That helps equate to about $8.3 million additional for next year. That's why we're able to do a lot of things. I know not everything everybody wants, but there are a lot of things, including the LCAP, that will substantially increase or improve services for our students, especially that targeted population. And you could see in the 2020-2021, that's the target. So we've made significant, in just 2 years, we'll be making significant progress towards that target, which is a good thing. And you can see the net gain kind of highlighted there. But the key thing to understand, too, about the target, and I know we talk about the target, well, this target is a moving target. The target is based on your average daily attendance. So if our average daily attendance decreases, what is our target going to do? It's going to decrease. So we have a target back here of 90.7, but that can go down. So it's going to change over the years. Another thing to remember, and this kind of ties to these expenditures and services, is nearly, well, over 10%, 11% of our funds come from the supplemental and concentration grants. That is the money generated by your free and reduced lunch recipients, your English learners, and your foster youth. So it's not the same traditional proportionality we used to talk about when we had the restricted state monies. It's just a calculation. So when we come with this and we say $7.6 million of the money that we're going to get from the state next year, our LCF funds, that's a calculation. Proportionally, that's how much we're getting from the supplemental and concentration grants. However, LCFF and the local control funding formula, really how it's legislatively presented, and specifically with a district like ours, which is above 80% of those targeted subpopulations, we just have to increase or improve funding and services achievement. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be cognizant of the fact that we have this percentage of this targeted subpopulation, but again, we can increase or improve service. It's not a simple calculation of money. So how are we going to do that first? We're going to do things that are district-wide that will benefit all of those subpopulations, and we may do targeted things just for a specific subgroup. So again, it doesn't have to be $7.6 million exactly on each subgroup or how we do, but we have to increase or improve some kind of services or achievement of some sort. So getting into the actual expenditures, this is the list under Goal 1, and our superintendent again went over a lot of them. The core funding for staff development is going to be moved to the general fund, so that's an additional $600,000. Instructional materials, the English language arts, the set aside that she talked about is $500,000. So we are earmarking that money specifically for that purpose. The K-3, 24 to 1, there will be 3 FTE to get us in compliance, and that measurement is taken by school site. So it isn't, again, some classes may be higher, but it's the average per school site. Athletics activities at the high school, so we're adding budget to the high schools. Athletics cost a lot of money at the schools. There's stipends, obviously, for coaching and other supports, so it's much needed relief for their site budgets. We talked about the Air Force ROTC, so that's going to be the startup fund. The library clerks, you can see that's a total of 4.8 FTE, so full-time equivalents, not necessarily bodies, but full-time equivalents. One music teacher, which would be one body because it's one full-time equivalent. In regards to the internal auditor and compliance officer, kind of speaking from past experience, I've been in a district where there wasn't significant findings, and the very first year I was there, I was talking to authorities and self-qualifying the district the next year. That was with the oversight of a county office as well. These kind of things, they might seem like, well, you're spending a lot of money on that, but if you can produce a more efficient operations and eliminate waste or perhaps not the best practices, you can actually save the district a lot of money. Not only that, you're presenting yourself as a district that will do anything to follow rules, and that's the kind of behavior I think we want to model as a district. We have a fiscal management system that's completely in-house. There's no support given to that. That kind of person will help this. There's a lot of procedures and protocol that aren't in place here that we can help implement with this that will protect and safeguard our assets. So even though there might not be something happening, there could be, but you're going to put in the protocol and procedures that you will be able to identify those things. So there's a lot of benefit that can go into this. Most importantly, I really think it will help us be more efficient in our operations. So every dollar that we can be more efficient with is a dollar that we can dedicate back to the services for our students. And I think that's really our goal with this, is to make sure that we're looking at every nook and cranny and really fiscally and operationally doing our best for our students. The categorical financial technician, that is less about having somebody at the district office and really providing support to the site. It's about bridging the gap between what they have on paper and actually helping them implement what they're going to have on the site. That person needs to have an understanding of programs and financial, but that's to be determined because we really need to work with the sites. We need to work with the other parties that would obviously have a lot of input on this matter to develop this position. So the reason it's to be determined is it's still under development, and we're going to have to get into much more details. But that's where input is very important in this process. So we didn't want to put a number if we didn't have one accurately. And the next two items were spoke about tonight, too, and it talks about increased learning time for all students, add instructional time. This really goes back to that proportionality. It's not proportionality necessarily in number. It's about increasing or improving our services to students. Obviously, our staffing is important in that, and we need to work with many stakeholders, including our collective bargaining units, to come up with the best solutions for this. So you'll see as I present the whole budget, there is still money in the budget that we can address these topics in, and we just need to work together, and I'll get into that more. You can see through the goal one alone is nearly $1.8 million worth of additions for next year. These are just additions. That stuff that was already incorporated into the budget is still there. Goals 2 and 3, there's actually a couple items that cross over and address goal 3. Yeah.
With the Air Force ROTC program, there is a cost associated with re-implementing or reinstituting the program, and so that's year one and year two. So that's right around $80,000. That's the 40 and the 40. Year three is the encroachment on the general fund once that program actually takes effect in the fourth year out.
Yeah, so again, I'm only going through the expenditures for 14-15, so that's just the cost in 14-15. Going back to goals 2 and 3, again, most of these are under goal 2. You'll see the ones that have an asterisk next to them are actually also incorporated into goal 3. We have very broad goals. The nurse we talked about, that's adding one full-time nurse. That's just for 14-15 again. We'll continue to address as 15-16 and beyond in the multi-year projection. Health aides, you have 6 half-time, full-time equivalents, so 3.0 total FTEs. 1.5 assistant principals we talked about, attendance clerks. 5 full-time equivalents. Obviously, attendance is very important in generating resources to do things, and it's to keep students engaged. The PBIS coordinator was discussed, and that's obviously, again, somebody housed at the district office, but going out to the sites and really helping the sites provide those programs. The mental health clinician we talked about, again, that's a half FTE. The intermediate school counselor was discussed. That's 1 full-time equivalent. The district accountability and assessment system, messaging system, school messenger system, so that's about providing engagement, getting people involved. We talked about the LCAP meetings and things. Hopefully we'll be able to improve upon that as a district and get more people engaged next year in this process. I know, speaking from past experience, input is very important to determine these things. I'm not, the money that I oversee is not my money. It's not anybody's money that sits on the board. We're there to help guide and facilitate the process. So input from the people that are serving our students is vital in that process. So hopefully we'll get more people involved with that money spent. The software, again, for the librarians, that's to help them obviously administer their collections. District translators, we talked about that. It's really about We've talked about the multitude of uses, but it's really adding 1.5 FTE to get that engagement factor, to really involve the parents, too, that don't have English as their first language. So we'll work on doing that and providing communication, too. Part of getting input and receiving input is being able to communicate with those parties, so we think that's vital. And then the deferred maintenance fund transfer, that's, we know how much the money is now. We're using that to determine the plan. Deferred maintenance, again, is replacing your system, such as roofing, flooring. It could be heating, ventilation, air conditioning. So we're going to develop a plan with that money to make sure that it goes to the best use at our facilities.
If I can interrupt for just 1 second, I need to clarify something. When I said accelerated reader, when I was looking at the column, it's accelerate reading, and that is the Destiny software program. So I misspoke and I led you down the wrong path, so I'm very sorry about that. So
Ryan,
there it is there.
Excuse me. Before you move the attendance clerks, five full-time positions, that's complete with benefits, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. And the messaging system, and it isn't?
It isn't? Half the cost benefits.
Yeah. They will become full-time, the halves, so there's an incremental
okay,
cost.
Okay, I got you. The messaging system, $200,000 seems an exorbitant amount. Could you explain more to me why it... Pardon me?
That's three different items. You've got your district accountability assessment
system.
Oh. Data
I'm sorry, I got it. Thank you, Lenny.
And I believe those are all based on per pupil amounts. Yeah. So it's
ADA.
A cost per student
I got
and it's district wide.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm going to check, Ryan, but I believe that in the recent past we approved $200,000 for that messaging system and it stood alone.
It's not a new program. It's a program that will continue, and it's an annual fee that moves forward, and it's for two different systems, DataWise and School Messenger. So it's an annual contract, and so this is moving it to the next year and the next year and the next year. Again, it's not new, it's ongoing, so it's an annual renewal.
Gotcha. So looking at the big picture, after you add those LCAP and other assumptions and expenditures, because obviously you're increasing with your consumer price index, your step and call and benefits, we project to start the year, so our estimated actuals project us ending this year and starting the next year at $10.1 million. The revenues, the LCFF revenues, and federal revenues, local revenues total 83.9. And you can see where we are. The other outgo is that 0.8 in red is the deferred maintenance. And you can see the bottom line is you have nearly $2.4 million in budgeted surplus for next year. That's where those TBD items come in, and we need to have the discussion on how much those are going to cost. Obviously, if you spent more than 2.4, then you'd have a negative balance. If you spend less, you'd have a positive balance. So we do have available monies to address those items. We don't anticipate to end the year at $12.4 million, but since we haven't assigned those funds at this point, that's what it would be, projected-wise. Again, that's subject to change, and you know there's nuances when we do estimated actuals that 10.1 plus or minus, depending on where we finish the year. So I'll kind of give you a little more detail as we go into the budget for next year on the revenue side. And you can see the changes that we've had since the end. Well, where we project we're going to end this year, the estimated actuals for the 13-14 school year, and where we're going in the budget next year. Big increase, obviously, into the local control funding formula funding. There's no change in federal revenue. We anticipate that will continue at the same level. And other state revenue, a little lottery adjustment, so it's just a little smaller from us, but the local revenue. You can see it rounds up to about $8.2 million. So most of the money from LCFF will be the difference in next year's revenue stream. And you can see most of the money that we spend comes out of general fund. That big blue block is general fund. We spend a pretty good amount for our bond interest, and that's the service payments based on the local taxes. And the other bigger green is food services. Food services is a restricted budget, obviously, Fund 13. So the majority of our activity and the majority of what I will discuss tonight is the general fund, but there are other smaller funds that do. The charter has their own fund. You can see it on there as well, nearly $3 million. And then of the funds that the general fund generates, again, you can see LCFF sources, 83% of that pie. They will only get federal revenues, only 7%, which has actually shrunk in the past years. Other state revenue, we have at 5%, and then the other local revenue is another 5%. So the majority of what we're getting is out of LCFF. And another important chart that we kind of show every year is, and the reason it's important because this affects your revenues, is what is your enrollment, what is your attendance, and that enrollment is looked at from your seabed date. So you look at where you're that first Wednesday in October, you look at your average daily attendance, which is your P2 or your usually a measurement sometime in March, and you say, what is our yield? What are we really getting out of that? That yield is a determination of attendance. It's also dropout factors or increased enrollment over the year or decreased enrollment through the year based on movement in and out of the district. But it's something we have to watch, that 94-93, we're estimating that we'll continue to have 94-93 in enrollment in 14-15. But if that enrollment decreases, that will affect our actual revenues in 14-15. Well, at least the year after, because if you're declining, you can use your prior year P2 average daily attendance. So these are definite factors that we'll continue to monitor, and I know being a couple of weeks here in the district, I mean, it's going to be time in the system to develop to monitor this, because that target we said going down will be a direct relation to our attendance. So enrollment, the number of students that we take in and how our attendance rates are at each of our schools will impact this number. So you could see over the years there's been a slight decrease, and now it's bumped up a little bit on the yield. So that's a good sign in terms of attendance and dropouts, but we'll continue to monitor that. You can also see enrollment has decreased a little bit over that same time period. So just something we're going to have to monitor and stay on top of. I mean, it's part of our goals and part of what we're doing as a district, but very important to the revenue side. Lottery money, the reason I always present this is because people have this inflated idea of the lottery money that goes to education. Obviously, 124, that's per average daily attendance. So it's not a large amount of money. I know the sites obviously appreciate the money that they get because they have some in their discretionary budget on that unrestricted side. And then we have some restricted monies for textbooks and other materials. But it's not, obviously, a significant part of our budget. That's where the other state revenue comes in. Now, the expenditure side is obviously, we don't control the revenues as much as we would prefer. A lot of that is determined by what the state is going to tell us in LCFF. Our population determines that. The reason I brought to you enrollment and attendance, that's how we help control it. We have a little bit of say, too, in your other local revenue, what we can generate as a district. But revenues, for the most part, are dictated to us. It's expenditures that we control. And a lot of what's coming in the LCAP is expenditures. How are we going to – we have these resources. What are the highest priorities in the district that we can meet this year? And you can see it's a three-year plan. We'll continue to meet priorities as resources become available. On the expenditure side, the changes you'll see from where we estimate to end this year and where we're going to start next year, and there's some staffing additions, and you saw that was part of the additional expenditures. Stephen Column, retirements, other adjustments related to staffing. On the certificated side, you have the same type of movement on the classified side. So there's 1.5. Because you're asking, where's that $8.2 million, that net of additional revenue going? Well, we have some additional expenditures. We have a surplus, but there's also additional things that increase from year to year that we have to take into account. That's where this comes in. Employee benefits are an increase. One of the assumptions, and I didn't talk about it, might actually change again, is we're significantly going to have to, the employer contribution for CalSTRS is going to increase, and CalPERS as well. But CalSTRS was something that wasn't included in the governor's budget in January, and I know you guys discussed, was included and may revise, and it was going from 8.25 to 9.5%. Of the salary of an employee will be paid as part of their pension to the state. Well, The proposed budget that was presented on by the legislation on Sunday night knocks that back down to 8.88, but there's still a, by the end of the decade, the beginning of the next decade, there's a significant over doubling of that rate. So these kind of increases, as we get additional LCFF money, you're going to take money off the top for step and column, for any staffing additions we do, obviously. Employee benefits are going to be impacted. We talked about, you know, we have a cap, but I mean, even the employees are feeling the effect of the health and welfare benefits. So that's going to be an area of that we're going to have to monitor very closely and work with everybody on. Materials and supplies, we put some money in there, discretionary, but some of that too is just the CPI and cost of goods going up. Same with services. So you can see 83% of our revenues came from the general fund. Well, 84% of our expenditures come from the general fund. Again, the general fund is, name that for a reason, that's where most of our activity is occurring. You can see there is some on the bond, food services, very similar to the last graph. I mean, you have the specialized restricted funds, but most of our activity is on the largely unrestricted fund.
I have a question. Can you go back to the previous slide, please? Now, I hate to be such a nitpicker, but when I look at stuff, it bugs me. If you take the total of certified salaries, the 1.2 plus 0.4 equals 0.16. Not 0.15.
It's just a rounding. So you might have like 350,000, so you round to 0.4. You might have 1.1 something. It's just a rounding. So if it's off by 0.1, it should be okay. If it's off by like 0.3 or 0.4, then we have an issue.
Okay.
But it's just rounding.
Gotcha.
So what I do is I take the rounding for each individual. If the total is really should be rounded down to 1.5, then it will go down. It's just a rounding convention. Here's the composition of our general fund expenditures. Again, 84% of our expenditures come from that fund, and you can see 43% are certificated salaries, classified salaries are 17%, and employee benefits are 19%. So 79% of our expenses are people-related, which shouldn't surprise anybody. We are services to adults to offer, adults are adult people offering services to the children of this community, the younger people. So, a lot is there. There's also some books and supplies are a little bit inflated at 8% because all your restricted carryover gets placed there until we can spend that money next year. So that's a little inflated. It's not quite that high. Services and other operating percent, you could see not anything really on the capital out. But most of it is people expenses and will continue to be for the foreseeable future. And kind of going into salary and benefits, I always like to see the different bargaining units and kind of give a relative notion of where we're spending that money. You can see the teachers obviously are the largest percentage. Then you have your management and confidential group is the third largest, second is actually your operating engineers, which is a lot of your classified labor. You have a couple other CSEA classified labor chapters and then supervisory you can see at 1.8 and then other or unrepresented are the other 1.8. So that's kind of the breakdown if you look at it by bargaining unit. Another thing, we didn't talk a lot of the numbers I'm talking to you about and the LCAP itself is unrestricted now or targeted, but your restricted side obviously impacts your unrestricted side and they're restricted to a purpose, but when you can't meet those purposes, you have to contribute from the unrestricted side because it's our obligation to provide those services. And obviously two that are big are special education and now routine maintenance is still technically restricted, but that may or may not go away. It's been flexible until the end of next year, so it just depends on where the legislature goes. But we've been obviously not really funded on that side, on the restricted sense and the flexibility, so we contributed a lot more to that program. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just something that's obviously needed to maintain our facilities and provide that optimal learning environment for our students and also a proper working environment for our staff. So the one that always kind of comes in with every district is special education. And a 13% increase is not something, whereas routine, that was strategic to try to get more money into that maintenance. Special education wasn't. And if you look at special education expenditures, you know, we have an encroachment on the unrestricted side of nearly $3.7 million. And you have a $10.8 million budget. So that's quite a high contribution. And we can't obviously we have to maintain those services to our special ed, but that's something where we can look on the expenditure side to try to, there's a lot of factors that actually go into that, but that is definitely something that we need to pay attention to and understand that. And we're not dissimilar in the sense that it does encroach on our general fund, just like our unrestricted general fund, just like many districts, but our ability to maintain that. So it's something we can work and look at with our cell phone, something we have to see. And you can see a lot of that goes to services and other things. So we'll have to look and see what we can do on that part. But, you know, that's taking money that we could use for other purposes. But we have to provide those services for our special education students. And so when you look at the combination of those revenues and expenditures, you see the ending fund balance. And again, there's the actual number, so I go into a little more detail than rounding. You're at about 10.1. You're going to go to 12.4. But anything above that is surplus in the terms of you have these recurring revenues and these recurring expenditures. But once it sits in that ending fund balance and the year ends, then it becomes one-time money because you're not spending that money anymore in terms of balancing your expenditures with your revenues. It becomes a pool of money that's there. $10 million, obviously, a little over on our budget is more than 10%. So we're at a healthy enough reserve level, but if we decide to spend that money again, it would have to be for a one-time purpose. That may be something that comes through because the budget proposal talks about a maximum reserve amount. So we'll have more information to the board as that develops and becomes finalized. But again, once it sits there, it becomes one-time money. So I don't know if there's any questions or how that works, but we'll have to look at that. And it isn't our intention, obviously, to increase our ending fund balance. I mean, I really think we want to use those resources that are surplus to meet those to-be-determined items. So we'll work with, obviously, the many parties that help help us do bigger and better things for our students. So the multi-year, the reason I didn't highlight the one column is it takes into account all 3 years. Now, the multi-year projection is required Assembly Bill 1200 many years ago, and even the county office has to provide oversight and ensure that we have a multi-year where we meet our reserve for economic uncertainty, you know, 2 years plus out, so 3 years total. But under LCFS, multi-year projection has a little bit different meaning because there's no requirement, as in the past we used to get COLA every year, so this cost of living adjustment was statutorily required. There's no statutory requirement to increase funding under LCFS. That being said, obviously we had a great increase this year. As part of that restoration process, there's no guarantee next year. We use gap funding, kind of conservative estimates from School Services of California. You can see 7.8%, 8.4%. We roll forward the expenditures. We roll forward what we think COLA is going to be, what semicolon is going to be, because those things will occur. So when we look at the multi-year, it's a best guess, but on the revenue side, it's a really tenuous guess at this point. So that's why we're talking about you're going to adjust this budget. Your budget's going to adjust during the year, but every year it's going to adjust significantly. The LCAP will adjust significantly. The reason I didn't go through all the expenditures that happened in 15, 16, and 16, 17 is that's all subject to funding. So as these other benefits and other step and column and other things, cost of the goods that we purchase and services increase, that could eat up all the additional revenues if there's additional revenues. It's going to take us a more diligent effort than in the past. I mean, we really need to monitor things day to day, year to year, including the LCAP. And so we'll have to adjust those. There may be, if there's more money like there was this year, there may be more additional things we can add to the LCAP. That's why the input and the collaborative process with our stakeholders is going to be vital. And we know that under LCFF and LCAP. So if you look at the multi-year, there's an increase every year, even with the conservative estimates for revenue in 15, 16, and 16, 17. There's going to be increases to any fund balance. We're not proposing that we should have those increases necessarily. We need to use those resources in the best way to meet student needs. So graphically, you can see it's an upward. We're not saying that white arrow needs to go up. We just want to try. I mean, from an economic standpoint, I would recommend to try to balance your budget. So there will be, hopefully, we're anticipating additional resources in the out year, but again, that's tenuous. So we present it as part of our financial documentation. It's required by the state, but it's going to be, I really recommend to look at it year to year. So when we present the 14-15 budget, that's we're really focused on 14-15. But we do have to plan and do what we can. So if we have items and priorities that we want to address, then we'll address them as the funding becomes available. So So looking ahead, you can see there was a significant increase this year. That's obviously very important that we understand. And we have a plan for the additional monies this year. Obviously, some of that's going to be incorporated just into the cost of doing business and the increased prices, but there are a plan to do additional things for our students. And that's incorporated into the budget. The LCAP is part of the budget. The LCAP doesn't lay out everything in the budget. It's just part and incorporated into the budget. There are still three items, as we said, to be determined. We've reiterated that over and over again. And there's nearly $2.4 million in surplus, obviously, to address those items and still have a balanced budget. But it's going to require a collaborative effort to how to spend those monies. We're obviously going to have to work with stakeholders, our collective bargaining units, to determine what we can do and what's best for students ultimately. The LCAP does have those two additional years. Again, some items listed. Depends on the revenue streams, and I express that. But this is a collaborative effort that's going to go day-to-day, year-to-year. So I look forward to working with a multitude of stakeholders here under the superintendent's guidance to help allocate our resources in the way that's best for our students.
All right. Questions? Board? Thank you very much for the excellent presentation.
Thank you.
The motion to close the public hearing, please. Oh, I am sorry. I didn't even see you there.
Yeah, lights are off back there, so. Yeah, just a quick question on page 7 of your document here where you're talking about the additional expenditures for 2014-2015. On there is core funding for staff development days at $600,000. That's been a part of our contract for about the last 10 years. How's that an additional expense? That's something that's been ongoing for years.
It's additional to the unrestricted side, the general fund. So it used to be funded out of restricted Title II monies.
So
it is an addition in the sense that we're using those unrestricted LCFF dollars to fulfill that obligation.
So basically you're just shifting the funding from one source to another? It's not really additional spending?
Since the four staff development days are in the contract, it means they are mandated. They're not eligible truly any longer for Title II funding. So, yes, it used to come out of Title II, but now that it has been part of the contract, we were able to take it out of Title II.
Right.
Now we're saying we want to reserve those funds for additional staff development, and we want the contracted required 4 days, which roughly is around the $600,000, to come out of the LCFF. It frees up more professional development money so we can do more professional development to include our classified staff, our principals, and more for our certificated staff as well. As we all know, there's lots of demands for professional development. So we
need
more
dollars. We're just trying to understand why it was an additional expense, since it was an ongoing thing is what we're looking at. Another question that we are talking about is the impact of the new legislation at the state to cap the reserves of the district at 6%. Mm-hmm. Do you have a plan for how we're going to go forward with that?
We're probably going to present, if that comes to fruition and the budget's adopted, we'll present that to the board, and then we'll have to develop a plan. Again, this is a fluid process. That was revealed on Sunday night. This budget was already completed. But, we'll have to work on that plan. It's one-time money once it sits in the reserve, so we'll have to come up with a plan that uses it in a one-time fashion.
Right, but looking at the multi-year projection, we also have an ongoing increase in our income stream.
We're projecting that. That doesn't necessarily mean it will occur.
Right.
But likely it will occur, as long as, because the economic indicators do say it's going to occur at least through the Prop 30 taxes, so 2017, 2018, somewhere around there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm wondering if we could. I'm wondering if we could bring up the slide that's on page 18. Can I go back? I'd like to bring up this slide so the board members can look at it while I talk. Yeah.
19.
I mean, I do it, but I don't want to mess up with.
I could put in my own numbers too.
Thanks. So one of the things that I heard Ryan say is that once we end a year, the ending fund balance is then considered something that we could make one-time expenditures from. However, because that ending balance, as I've been coming back and talking to you year after year, continues to increase, we have this ongoing funding. It is ongoing, that because we're not spending it ongoing, it turns into, oh, that's just one-time funding. And that's what's happening with each of those bars. In the new legislation, we are required right now to have a 3% reserve, which is about $2.5 million. The new legislation says that we're going to have to cap it at twice that. You can't have more of a reserve. It's just signed Sunday, I think. And so it's been signed. It's new legislation. So that means we have to cap it at $5 million. We're already at, what is that, $10 million? So we already have twice as much in 13, 14 than that cap would allow us. And yet we're projecting to keep going up. Now, I must say, Ryan, I love this slide compared to former slides that had us at negative $22 million, so that's awesome. But I hate to see that money that right now is ongoing money turn into, because we didn't spend it, one-time funding where everybody says, oh, we can only spend it on a one-time thing. We're not a bank account. We're not supposed to be saving up for rescuing the world. So that's my comment on that one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I provide some clarification? So I do understand what she's saying. But when you budget, you're trying to budget no more than what you bring in, typically. Just like a bank account, you know, if you make $100, you want to spend $100 and no more. We're not necessarily saying we want to have more money, but you budget a certain amount. You're not going to spend all those budget strands necessarily. If you budget well, you're going to get very close to that. And so, yeah, it does. If you don't spend it, it does become one-time money. Our goal is to budget it in an efficient manner as possible so that we'll basically end up balanced for the year. As we do have those, obviously, budget savings or certain amounts that do, we'll have to develop a plan. And if it does become 6% and we're around $5 million, we'll have to develop a plan for that money. I mean, I think as long as it's within the best interest of the students, I mean, our recommendation will always be to have my recommendation at least will be to have a balanced budget. And if you're presented with a problem of having more money than what you budgeted, then I think it's a good problem to have, and we can work collaboratively to determine what's best for students.
Thank you. If there's no other question, then do I have a motion to close the public hearing? I have a motion by Mr. Fleury. Do I have a second? Second, Mr. Harris. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's 6-0. Now we move to, I believe it's copiers. Copier rental agreements. The purpose of this agenda item is request the board approve copier rental agreements for various sites. Who's going to address that?
Sorry. Traditionally, I think these contracts did occur, but we're trying to make sure that the board sees every contract. I mean, that's something I've tried to do is anytime we commit the district's funds to anything, or we agree to language or term language, we want the board to see it. It's a common practice we've been doing. We're just trying to replace the older equipment and rent. Sometimes districts do capital leases where they rent to basically own. These are just rental agreements that seem to work very good, and the sites are happy with the equipment that they're getting. But again, just like anything, you have to continue to update that equipment.
Kathy, is there anything else you'd like to add? Okay. Do I have any questions from the board? If not, can we entertain a motion?
Make a motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve by Mr. Harris. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Mr. Reck. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's 6-0. Approve designees to sign warrants, contracts, and other documents. Dr. Todd?
This is Ryan.
I'm sorry, Ryan.
This is just to provide us authorization to commit the district's funds and monies. It allows us to sign documents, warrants. Warrants are just checks. And anything else that commits the district to financial proceeds. The reason to have Mr. Carrion and our superintendent listed is because the conflicts of interest, if there's other directors or departments, it typically will add the fiscal services director too once we hire a replacement for Penny. So that we'll probably bring this back, add the four signatures so that the people that are responsible for committing district funds are the ones that have the signatures on record with the board.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, can we entertain a motion? A motion to approve by Mr. Fleury. Do I have a second? Second for Mr. Boom. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is it 6-0?
But before you move to the very last thing, I have instructions from Lisa. I am to collect this spiral-bound document because we need to replace a couple of pages. And she also wanted me to make sure you know that we have now moved into the 410s in the district office, and our office is taking Fridays off, so your board packets, which you can use to bench press with this next meeting because they are large, will be ready on Thursday for either delivery or pickup. So don't forget Thursday for the rest of the summer is the pickup day for those board packets. Thank you, Mr. President.
No, thank you, Dr. Todd. Are we closing the memory of anybody, Mr. Fleury?
No.
Okay. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.